You're listening to The Point. Members of the Wampanoag tribe lived throughout east southeastern Massachusetts, but the Wampanoag language ceased to be spoken by the middle of the 19th century. A group called the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project hopes that 2 years from now there will be a new school in Mashpee, a language immersion school in which the majority of classes are taught in Wampanoag. In a few minutes, we're going to sit down with the coordinator for the proposed school, but first, WCAI's Sally Mars takes us on a visit to a camp run this past summer by the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project.
After teaching a language lesson in Wampanoag, counselors at the Summer Turtle Youth Camp, located on a farm in Mashpee, show the children how to do the mosquito dance.
Mosquito dancers ready? All right, guys.
Ten-year-old Paul Wilsey is one of 30 kids attending this year's camp.
Natasawis. It's how you say my name is in Wampanoag, so Natasawis Paul, that means my name is Paul.
The three-week-long summer camp is run by the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project, or WLRP. It's an organization dedicated to bringing the Wampanoag language, which hasn't been spoken for 150 years, back to fluency. The project was started in 1991 and has since held a number of language classes, workshops, and immersion camps. As of last fall, the project has set its eyes on an even higher goal, opening a language immersion school in which the majority of classes will be taught in Wampanoag. Tribe member Jennifer Weston is helping WLRP develop an application for a Mashpee-based charter school that will serve students from Barnstable, Bristol, Dukes, and Plymouth counties.
Folks really have a broader vision for how they'd like to see the language live more fully. And we think that that will happen once we have a generation or two of children who are fully bilingual and are really able to communicate more broadly with their families and people of all different generations.
The plan is to start with a K-3 school and add higher grade levels as the students advance. The majority of classes will be taught in Wampanoag, but there will be two class periods conducted in English as well. Weston says the project staff are designing a curriculum that meets state educational standards and prepares students for standardized tests, but is also rooted in Wampanoag culture, traditions, and values.
So we're bringing in folks from all different parts of the Wampanoag communities to talk to our staff about things like planting and harvesting and shellfishing and local ecosystems. These interviews will all contribute to a curriculum design process that then will also be complemented by the state standards as well.
20-year-old tribe member Brian Moskowitin is a counselor at the summer camp and is training to be a history teacher at the charter school. He says that Wampanoag children could really benefit from a curriculum that meets both state and traditional standards.
I think it's important for our kids to have both because walking in both worlds, you know, a lot of our people say it's like walking in a moccasin in a shoe. So we have to teach our kids, you know, this world that we live in today while trying to maintain our ancestral ties.
There are currently more than 50 indigenous language immersion schools in the United States, ranging from the Mohawk community in upstate New York to the extensive pre-K through postdoc immersion education offered throughout Hawaii. Weston says that as a result, there was also a rich body of research on language education and immersion for WLRP to draw from.
So one great example that we like to point to are the Navajo language immersion and bilingual schools in the Southwest. And they've had researchers who followed cohorts of their students and have found that their bilingual Navajo and English-speaking students outperform their monolingual English-speaking peers.
Weston says that not only will the school's bilingual education assist students academically, but it will also provide a positive classroom environment that will help Wampanoag youth forge strong cultural identities.
Often in today's public schools, Native students only hear about American Indian people around Thanksgiving or around Columbus Day. And the idea is often that Native cultures were less civilized or less technologically advanced. And that's something that we really want to push back against in our classrooms and talk about all of the amazing adaptations and survival skills and innovations that very diverse tribal societies throughout the Americas brought to their people over millennia.
Tootie Coombs is another teacher in training, and she says that today's youth are hungry for ways to connect with their culture.
When I was growing up back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, kids were a lot more embarrassed to wear their regalias, to dance, to speak. I think today, I know today they want to know. You know, they want to be in tune with who they are so that they don't feel a part of a world that, you know, they don't know where they exist. So having their language and knowing it just gives them that sense of, okay, I am a culture. I have a culture. I have a language. And that just gives them that confidence.
Mashpee School's Superintendent Brian Hyde says he supports the charter school plans. And WLRP will be submitting its application to the state next fall. After that, a series of public meetings will be held throughout Massachusetts to give community members an opportunity to comment. If the application goes forward, the school could open as early as August 2015. Until then, WLRP will be working on the school's curriculum, as well as language training and professional development for its future teachers and staff. For WCAI, I'm Sally Mars in Mashpee.
Joining us now, Jennifer Weston, the charter coordinator for the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project. So I'm going to get this out now. I always am so confused. Wampanoag, and the tribe members I've asked, I get both. Is it one of those like via, tomato, tomato, both are correct?
Well, we say Wampanoag in our language, in the language. So that's been adapted into those two English forms that you just mentioned.
Gotcha. All right. So the summer camp that Sally visited this past summer was in Mashpee. But as she mentioned, this proposed immersion language school is an intertribal effort.
Yes.
So what are the tribes that are part of the project and what children will be eligible?
So the language project was founded by an elder from the Aquinna Wampanoag tribe named Helen Manning and co-founded with our current project director, Jesse Little Doe Baird from the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe. And they also brought in folks from the Assonet Band of Wampanoag and also the Herring Pond Wampanoag tribe as well. So those are the four tribal communities that we serve. But because we're applying for a public charter, any student within the region that we're proposing to serve, which is a four-county area, any student, regardless of tribal affiliation, would be eligible to apply to attend our school in the future.
Right. So as Sally mentioned, the Wampanoag language ceased to be spoken by the middle of the 19th century. Can you describe how you're getting staff and educators prepared to teach the language?
Well, we've had a long track record so far of reclaiming and revitalizing this language. So Jesse Baird is our senior linguist who received a Master's of Science in Algonquian Linguistics from MIT. And we also have a curriculum specialist named Natana Hicks, who's also from Mashpee, and she followed Jesse and also attended MIT and worked in Algonquian Linguistics. So they're able to provide the foundations of the grammar and work with the historic documents. So Wampanoag was widely written throughout the 1600s and 1700s by many generations of Wampanoag people. There was very widespread literacy in tribal communities at that point in time. So there's a huge body of documentation that can now be accessed. And Wampanoag is also part of a much larger Algonquian language family. So there are 36 or so languages that are sister languages. So that's one place that our staff looks to if they're unsure about a term or can't find a term in the written record. They can look to spoken languages that never cease to be spoken, like Mi'kmaq or Passamaquoddy or Penobscot. And that doesn't mean that those languages aren't in danger today. They very much are. Most indigenous languages in the Americas are very much endangered. So that's another element that really drives the project and our motivation to continue the forward progress that's been made so far in the past 20 years.
Yeah. Talk about Jesse Little Baird. She's the one who really kind of was brought this to bring back the language. I mean, this was really based on her research and her, I guess, hard work to get this going, right?
Yeah, she was the driving force behind the project. And I helped produce a film with a wonderful documentary filmmaker named Anne Makepeace. We put out a film called We Still Live Here that aired on PBS in 2011. And it told the story of how Jesse's ancestors spoke to her in a series of dreams and how that was sort of her calling to seek out this work and really begin to understand the meaning of all the language that's all around us in Massachusetts and New England on highway signs and names of towns like Kitiwit and Hyannis, for example. And so Jesse then sought out some tribal elders in her community and other Wampanoag communities like Helen Manning, and they formed a collective and eventually incorporated as a nonprofit organization.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned that looking to some of the written documents, but a lot of the traditions things are oral, right? I mean, so
right.
So is it difficult? I mean, did Jesse have a hard time, you know, finding, you know, what certain words were because maybe it wasn't written down in some of the records?
Well, as I mentioned, there's a huge body of written documentation, including the first King James Bible ever published in the Western Hemisphere. There were, I believe, 3 King James Bibles published initially within the 17th century. And so our linguists continue to collaborate with folks at MIT, other Algonquianists, and they're always looking for new words within that document. I think the dictionary now contains about 11,000 terms. Mm-hmm. And our team of teachers and curriculum and language specialists at our offices are also sometimes making new words. So if they can't find a term for something like salmon, for example, then they'll look at closely related languages and do the corresponding sound changes from that sister language to Wampanoag. And so there's a very scientifically defined process. And then also just meeting with and collaborating with other tribal communities who are also seeking to revitalize their languages among younger generations. So we hosted the Tribal Historic Preservation Office of the Penobscot Nation in our offices a couple of months ago. And our teams were mutually surprised at how much was intelligible across languages, even though they're separated by many hundreds of miles.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We are talking with Jennifer Weston, the Charter Coordinator for the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So the school will start out the first year with kindergarten and first grade, right?
That's correct.
And will the students be completely immersed in the language from day one, or is this something that's going to be gradually introduced?
Our goal is to start with as much Wampanoag language as possible. We have a lot of models to look to across Indian country among the eastern and western bands of Cherokee. Both of those communities have long-standing and highly successful immersion schools, so we can speak with their staff and learn from some of their best practices. We've taken a look at curricula from schools like the Waduka Dotting Ojibwe Language Immersion School, which is a publicly chartered school in Wisconsin. And we've also been in communication and visited with the Mohawk Akwesasne Freedom School and looked at the records of some of the Navajo language immersion and bilingual programs. So our initial plan is that 4 of the 6 daily class periods will be taught entirely in Wampanoag, although of course, a lot of our students are going to come in with pretty rudimentary knowledge, although there are a fair number of families at this point who have attended our family weekend immersion camps or students who've come to the summer turtle camp, like we heard in the earlier segment. So there's a lot of vocabulary out there, and kids know a lot of the songs that our staff have written over the years, you know, that we have number songs and color songs and good morning songs and things like that. So kids will come in with some basic knowledge, and it will really be... I think it will be a challenge, though, initially with our teachers to get them to really embrace that language and use it throughout the school day. But as I said, we have a lot of great content models to look to.
And they'll also be instructed in language arts class to learn English grammar, reading and spelling.
Right.
But as you said, majority of classes will be taught in Wampanoag, and the curriculum will also incorporate Native American culture. So give us an example of your plans to incorporate culture into the curriculum.
So one of the schools that our curriculum specialist, Nachana Hicks, visited was the Waduka Dotting Ojibwe Immersion School, and they implement what's called a project-based curriculum. So each unit of their semester, for example, is based around a culturally and seasonally appropriate activity. So I think when Natana visited last fall, they were starting on some ricing projects. So that was a traditionally harvested crop that was gathered, and it's very complex and, you know, process that involves many generations in the community. And so we've looked at that model to implement within our school as well. So we've developed so far 8 project-based units encompassing activities from planting, fishing, harvesting, hunting. I think we're having a unit in the fall on corn, beans, and squash. So this group of crops that were planted and harvested by tribes for many thousands of years and have lots of symbiotic qualities and properties. And so that's something we want to ground our science, math, social studies, history, and literacy courses around. So this idea of very early, very ancient agricultural practices, and then, you know, pull out lots and lots of related lesson plans that enrich that content and provide students with a deeper understanding across many subject areas of the kinds of activities and agricultural practices and scientific innovations that their ancestors engaged in for many thousands of years.
Yeah. In Sally's piece, we heard, I don't know who was saying this, but they were saying in the 1970s that sometimes tribe members sort of distanced themselves. And now that we're seeing younger people being much more interested in the culture and the history, you're rather young yourself. Would you say that's true? Are you seeing a lot of young people really embracing their culture now, more so than maybe
we do
in the past?
See a lot of interest in the language and in culture. Projects. And I'm actually not from the Wampanoag tribe. I'm from the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. And so I grew up in the Dakotas. But I think that in the 70s and 80s, there was very much a sense that perhaps our cultures were very much marginalized and not seen as equivalent or as having much value to bring to public education. And I think that's something that's really changed. And there's a sense of great cultural and linguistic revitalization, almost a renaissance throughout Indian country in terms of young people realizing that we have very little time in terms of embracing these languages and bringing them more fully back into our communities. And that's part of our process of rebuilding our nations after, you know, many centuries of dispossession and oppression.
So research has shown that students attending language immersion schools show better academic performance than students in traditional schools. Do we know why, or are there any theories as to why?
Well, there's about 30 years of scholarly research out there now, predominantly focusing on second language acquisition of foreign languages in the United States. So, for example, we know that just about every honors program in every high school in America requires study in a second language, which is usually French or German or Spanish, for example. But we do have some specific research on indigenous languages and their successes in tribal communities. And so I think that with these two bodies of research, we definitely are seeing that indigenous language education really empowers students to fully understand their ancestors' worldview and their cultures. It gives them the context for why that's important to learn and what their place is in this very long continuum of tribal families and tribal peoples on our homelands. But we also see that just in terms of second language acquisition in general, there's a lot of benefits to cognitive abilities and critical thinking, reasoning, logic, and just the benefit of being able to communicate with more people. So the College Board, for example, has put out a couple of studies that show students who've had four or more years of second language study perform really well on math tests, whether or not they've had specialized math instruction. There seems to be some great benefits to just having a second language in your life and having your brain, you know, work in two worldviews and two ways of thinking.
Yeah. You'll be accepting applications for school in the fall, for classes that begin in 2015, right?
So our first step in the charter application process, which is really well defined here in Massachusetts, is to submit a prospectus this summer. So in July, we'll submit our first piece of documentation to the state, and then we'll hope to be invited to submit a final charter application next fall. So I think it's about October, and we'll hear whether or not we've been approved the following February, so February 2015, and then we'd immediately start accepting applications at that point.
So once you receive your charter, income will come from the sending districts of the students, but I imagine there are significant costs associated with getting this project off the ground, staff training, curriculum development. Where are you getting the funding?
Right now, we're supported by a three-year Department of Health and Human Services grant from the Administration for Children and Families. They have a unit called the Administration for Native Americans, and they administer the largest Native American languages grant program in the country. So annually, they award a couple million dollars nationwide. So we were really fortunate to be among that pool of successful applicants. And this is actually the second ANA grant that WLRP has received. Our first was to train apprentices and just bring language fluency back into the lives of second language learners. That was a pretty small team, about 3 young women. And some of those women are now our future teacher trainees and future school administrators. And we're just starting year 2 of this 3-year grant. So we have a ways to go in terms of all of the curriculum and charter work.
Once Jesse started this, excuse me, a little frog in my throat. Have you found families that are trying to speak at home?
I think there's a growing number of families that are bringing the language back into their households. And that was something that Jesse and her family modeled very early on. So Jesse raised her youngest daughter with Wampanoag as her first language. And since then, some of our apprentices have become mothers themselves. And so they're able to use the language at home with their children. And then some of the Summer Turtle kids, you heard Paul talking about how to introduce himself. And so every morning, we had about 35, 36 kids attend that 3-week camp. It was all day. And there were 3 language blocks throughout the day. So kids learned kinship terms and words for clothing and, you know, games and all different elements of their day. And that wasn't an immersion camp. So there was lots of English language as well. But I think that those kids are kind of the roots of this next generation of speakers that we hope to foster. Yeah.
The summer camp idea sounds like really wonderful to get students and the community involved in the project. How has the camp been received, and do you have plans to continue it?
We do hope to be able to offer it annually every summer. So our plans for the school are to host almost a year-round school year. So we'd like to start in August and finish in June. So we've been having Summer Turtle every August, and we think we'll start moving that to July so that it won't conflict with our school schedule. But it's been very popular. There's been at least 3 dozen students attending it for the past several years.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier that you'll be taking any students in the district that wanted to come. Have you had kids outside the tribe coming to the summer camp?
Not so far. So for the past 20 years, the Language Project has really been limited in terms of the numbers of teachers that have been trained by the project and certified by the project to offer different levels of language instruction. And so there hasn't been capacity to offer language instruction to non-tribal households, although there have been non-tribal members who are married to a tribal member or have a child, for example, who's a member of the tribe. But to date, Summer Turtle has been for tribal families from the 4 communities that I mentioned earlier.
Right. I would imagine there'd be some interest, though, once you get the school going. I think it would be fascinating to learn the language.
Yeah, there have been some recent requests from local school districts and mothers and grandmothers whose children are in Falmouth, for example, or Bourne, who've wondered about how to bring the language into their schools. And is that something that we might be able to support? So we're always looking for ways to serve more tribal families and also to educate the broader Cape and Islands communities about the presence of this language and the fact that it was once very widely spoken throughout the region.
Yeah, and as you said, it helps us understand our own towns and street signs and, you know, what these words mean. And now, do you think once, I know you're still in the process of training teachers, so you don't have a ton of them to go around, but do you see at some future date maybe there being some kind of collaboration with some of the public schools here that you bring some of your instructors into their schools to maybe have some programs?
We do hope to have capacity to offer language instruction in public schools in the coming years, and we're developing plans to augment our current teacher corps right now. We did have one young man who graduated from the Mashpee High School this past summer who was able to fulfill his language requirement through attendance at community language classes. So that was kind of a great model that we'd like to explore further with the Mashpee Indian Ed program and Superintendent Hyde and others in the school district and surrounding school districts as well.
Learning a language can take some time. I mean, how long does it take to train these instructors?
Well, what we aim for is a minimum of about 10 to 15 hours each week of language immersion, so no English kinds of interactions. And at this point, we have a handful of young women and one male language apprentice who've been with the project at least for a year and some for as long as 3 or 4 years on almost a full-time employment basis. So they're at all varying levels of language proficiency along the scale that we use, which is drawn from the American Council for the Teaching of Foreign Languages. So that starts with very novice basic levels and goes all the way to advanced superior speakers.
Sounds fascinating. Jennifer Weston, the Charter Coordinator for the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project. Thanks so much for being here. Good luck.
Katapatish. Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.